Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
So great. What are we going to do? We're going to talk about how art's created.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the episode. You know what to do, of course. You like what you see, what you hear. You hit that subscribe button. You get new interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. You can find us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give this series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. We've had some great guests drop by lately. Ian Pace from Deep Purple was here. Jean Fogelberg, the widow of Dan Fogelberg. Lizzie Green, she's starring in Ransom Canyon on Netflix. We talked with Daryl Hall and John Oates separately. Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, Sarah McLachlan, Tracy Thorne of Everything But the Girl, Jeff Bridges to talk about not only some of his most iconic roles, but some of his favorite music as well. We started April with Finn Cole from Peaky Blinders, starring in the movie Last Breath with Woody Harrelson. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Don Felder. Of course, he was the Eagles' not-so-secret weapon, the guy who helped write Hotel California and melted faces with that double-neck guitar. These days, he's flying solo, still shredding, though, and he's got a brand new album called The Vault, 50 Years of Music, with tracks he found in his storage unit full of unreleased jams just waiting to be exhumed. We talk about the new album that finds the former Eagle dusting off decades of demos from slide-heavy 70s tracks to 80s disco bops to fresh cuts written in the last year. As Don puts it, if you're going to steal, you might as well steal from yourself. He shares the tale behind finding the original cassette of Move On from the beginning of his time with the Eagles, recording vocals in the shadow of Don Henley, reinventing heavy metal with Toto's rhythm section, and how Henley once told him to just make something up before performing one of the most iconic guitar intros of all time. No pressure, right? Let's do this. It's The Vault, 50 Years of Music, Kyle Meredith with Don Felder.
I hear you're in Kentucky.
I'm in Kentucky. Today it's sunny. Tomorrow it's tornadoes and storms and everything else, but we'll take the weather today.
I grew up in Florida dodging hurricanes my whole life, so I can empathize with you. I know what that's like.
You were just on vacation. I saw some nice pictures you took and posted, right?
Yeah, I get to run away now and then down to a friend's resort, and we scuba dive down there and play some golf, go out fishing, catch some 35 to 45 pound yellowtails. Just having a great time, you know, just wonderful.
Are you the type that said, can you relax on vacation, or are you the type that needs to be sort of active the whole time?
Being on an active vacation is relaxing from the music business, to tell you the truth. Between constantly touring on the road, our hotels, shows, buses, planes, all of that stuff, to when I come home, as you can see, I'm in my studio. And when I'm here, I do a lot of writing and recording here. So to be able to go away, no bus, no plane, only a 230-foot yacht that my friend has. We stay on that sometimes and fish off of it. It's a wonderful, wonderful break from my typical routine of touring and in the studio, touring and in the studio.
Well, the pictures sure look nice. Envious, you can color me on that one. But as we see around you, so perfectly suited on the screens behind you with the vault, the album cover of this. Oh, there it is. Look at that beauty. Look at that beauty right there. So take us through, because there's a story behind this. There's a concept. Like these are songs, some of these that have been kicking around for what, 50 years?
Well, what happened was in year 2000, I moved out of Malibu after living through five major fires out there. And I moved into Los Angeles. And I took my studio, which was an audio studio, tape recorders, 24-track tape recorder, and consoles, and I put it in storage until I could find a house, which I'm in now, and bought and stuff. But I'd gotten so into digital recording that I just left all that stuff in storage. But when I went out a couple of years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, to see what was in that storage unit that I hadn't seen in 20-something years, I started discovering all these tapes and boxes full of cassettes and DATs and CDs. I went, what is all this stuff? So I started listening back, and it was a lot of demo ideas that I had written starting, I think, in 1974 or 75, the very first one, which is now on this album, is called Move On. It's all slide guitar through the whole thing. And it started as one of the first songs I had written for the Eagles. Right after I had joined the Eagles, I had a little TAC four-track tape recorder. And so I made this drum track of me playing on a cardboard box. That was my drum track. And I played bass on it, and then I played slide guitar on it. That's all there was, right? But when I listened to it, I said, I love that slide. Like, I've got to take that slide idea and make it into a full track. So it was just little excerpts of ideas that I had that never got flesh put on the bones, per se.
It's interesting timing, too. Like, I was just, the interview I taped before this, and with Jeff Bridges, the actor, who's also a musician, did the same thing. Found a bunch of the stuff that he had recorded in the 70s. You know, and it's such a trip sometime, especially to have, as you say, packed it away to go back to hear that stuff. I mean, sure, it's a bit of memory lane. And we know that, you know, every song has its life, right, of when it finally arrives.
Yeah.
You know, some songs arrive in 20 seconds, 20 minutes or whatever. And some songs it takes 50 years. But as you're talking about, like, when you find these, and I love how you're talking about that, especially with Move On, how small of seeds were you pulling from? I mean, were many of them like mostly there? Did you have to kind of kickstart them to get to the point? Did you want them to sound like they're songs from 2025?
No, I didn't want them to sound like songs from 2025. Like, there's one song on there called All Girls Love to Dance.
Love that song. One of my favorites.
It was just written back in the 80s when that dance disco bass movement and stuff was done. So I had pretty much not finished it, but I pretty much sketched out a pretty good demo of it. The idea was to not make it sound like the 80s, but you couldn't help but making it sound like where it was written. You know, some things are just ingrained in the music, you know, that period was. And so, but then when you look at stuff like, you know, the last two songs that I actually wrote, which are written in 24 and recorded in 24 25, which were Free at Last and I Like the Things You Do, those were just made up on the spot. I love walking into my studio with no idea what the hell I'm gonna do, turning it on, picking up a guitar, plugging it in, and push record and just sit and play for a half hour, 45 minutes, and see what comes out. I mean, to me, that's when those moments of brilliance come. Like when I was sitting on the couch playing this 12-string acoustic guitar, and the progression for Hotel California just came out of me. I said, I gotta go record some of this. And I went back in this back bedroom and had a little reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I played some of it so I wouldn't forget it. So the lesson was, some of the things that happened that just come through you like that if you can recognize them and sing them into a phone while I'm driving down the freeway, I'm singing a chorus or reciting a lyric line or something, just to have those little snippets of ideas. And then literally when you go back to say, what am I going to do? Oh, I love those lyrics. Let me write a track for that. And you just kind of, you take a little kernel of it and hope that it grows into a big oak tree by breathing life into it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Don Felder.
So going back to that earliest one, as we talked about, you know, with a song like Move On, I mean, here you are in 1974. You're coming off of Flow and the work with Crosby, Nash. You know, you're bringing that guitar stuff into the Eagles, as the story has been told many, many times. Is your style still developing? Like, what did you hear in that song? In that, you know, from that moment way back then?
It's funny because, you know, I grew up in Florida and I was really good friends with Dwayne on Greg Allman. And I admired Dwayne beyond your imagination, to tell you the truth. As a matter of fact, I have the distinct honor of having lost three battles of the bands to the Allman Brothers. It didn't matter if it was the Allman Joys or the band called the Spotlights that they were in, or, you know, the Allman Brothers. Those two guys were the best.
You were going to lose either way, right? Yeah.
They were just unbelievable. So, you know, I started playing slide because I watched him play a lot, and he taught me at the beginning of my slide career on the floor of his mom's house in Daytona Beach. And so I was always chasing that idea of being a good slide guitar player. Mm-hmm. And so when I went back and listened, I went, damn, that was a really good lick. The whole song didn't matter. I mean, it was just those licks that I had come up with that I said, I'm going to use those. And if I'm going to steal, I might as well steal from myself, you know? So I did. And it took that idea and built the whole track around a whole new progression and everything. But the opening slide licks for the intros and stuff were just what prompted me to go back and finish that, you know?
So is it safe to assume then the finished version is probably quite different than that original demo?
Absolutely. And, you know, somebody asked me earlier, said, what do you think has changed since your first solo album, Airborne, and now? I go back and listen to that, and vocally I was so inhibited and reserved. And, you know, after coming out of a band with some of the greatest singers, with Don Henley and Glenn and the harmonies and everything, I was very insecure about my vocals. So it's mixed way down. You could hardly hear the lyrics. I was just paranoid about stepping out as a lead singer. But now, years later, I have done all the work I can to improve my voice, to improve I sing 90-minute shows top to bottom. Even if I'm off the road for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I come into my studio, I turn on the live tracks, I sing and play with them. It's like going to the gym. You got to keep yourself in shape, you know, vocally. It's a muscle. Your voice is a muscle, right? And my dexterity and the way I play, I just do everything I can to keep myself at my peak performance. As a matter of fact, during Hell Freezes Over, I would wake up in the morning in a hotel room. I used to carry a guitar with me. I'd sit and play for about an hour, just waking up, having my coffee from room service. We'd get on a plane, fly out to a venue. We'd do about an hour and a half sound check. I would sit backstage for 2 hours, nothing to do in this stadium locker room except play guitar. And then I'd go out and play a 3-hour show. So I was playing between 6 and 7 hours a day. I was not going to walk out on that stage and people go, it's not as good as I remember. He's not that good. So I have this this bar that I've set really high for myself physically. I take great care of myself. I eat well. I exercise. I do everything I can to stay healthy. And I maintain my skills, my gift of music, writing, creating, recording, playing live, singing, all of that. It's something that I think demands a lot of maintenance. And if you don't, then you don't demand that of yourself. You wind up walking out on stage and people go, I remember seeing Eric Clapton in the 70s. He played at the Forum here. And I took my 12-year-old, 13-year-old son to see him, who was a budding guitar player. And Eric was on the wrong side of sobriety at that time, I guess is the best way to put it. And he was playing along and made a couple of mistakes, bad notes. And my son looked at me and said, did he just make a mistake? I went, yeah, I think so. And then, you know, he was swaggering around, and in not every song, but frequently he would clam, right? My son was had a good enough well-trained ear that he could recognize a clam when he heard it. I will never do that. I will never let myself be disappointing to the people that are my fans and my audience.
Important to have that experience from the vantage of the audience member, so you know what that looks like. What that's you were mentioning that, you know, playing every day, especially in the Hell Freezes Over. Is that how you come up with that flamenco part that you gave Hotel California?
If you think about back in the 90s, everybody was doing their unplugged versions of their hits, right? I think Eric did an acoustic version of Layla. You know, it was the thing to do. So Henley wanted to have a portion in the show that was unplugged version. Now, when I wrote the music for Hotel California, it was never intended to be on acoustic guitar. It was intended to be plugged into some amps and turned up, and Joe and I just go toe-to-toe with each other, right? That's what it was written for. So I had worked up my skills on nylon string guitar by playing in the Holiday Inn in Harvard Square. After I got out of this recording studio, every day I'd go down and play for dinner from like 6 to 9, you know, The Shadow of Your Smile and all these kind of standards on nylon string guitar. So I had pretty good skills on nylon. I said, well, you can't do Hotel California on a steel string guitar. You'll sound like a bunch of hillbillies, you know, playing bluegrass. That's not the sound it has to be. So I picked up a nylon string guitar and started, you know, playing it at home myself, trying to figure out how we could do that. And then I ordered two new acoustic or nylon string guitars with pickups in them, one for me and one for Joe, so we could get together and figure out how we were going to do that unplugged version. So we get on the sound stage over at Warner Brothers, and there's a full orchestra with us, and there's recording trucks and about 20 cameras videoing this thing. So we do a sound check, and at the end of sound check, Henley says, you know, Hotel, it needs a special introduction. I went, well, what are you going to say? I thought he was going to, like, you know, talk about the history or the way it was written or something, or being in California. But he said, no, you need to just make up something.
Just make up something to one of the greatest songs of all time right now.
That was the task. I was assigned that. So I said, okay, you play this chord and I'll diddle. You play that chord, I'll doodle around, play a couple of D, here's the chords, and then I'll play a little introduction, right? And so it was just, you know, it was one of those moments where you just make it up on the spot. And thank God I had learned to improvise when I was living in a New York City in a jazz fusion rock band called Flo, that I could just make up stuff. That's whether it's a solo for a guitar or something for a record or whatever. So we walk out on stage, they're rolling this thing live. It's the first time it's like, well, I hope I'm funny, you know? And so I make up one, and then we film the show twice. You know, we emptied the audience and put another audience in, and so we recorded it twice for a live audience. The second time I just made up a different one. You know, I couldn't remember what I'd played the first time, so okay, I hope I'm funny, take two, you know. So we got in the studio and listened to the two introductions, and the one that you hear on the record was by far the best of the two. The other one didn't have clams. It just wasn't as – sometimes the first thing that comes out of you is by far the best, you know.
Yeah, and it ends up being an iconic moment in itself. That's funny how that happens, yeah.
You know, it's funny about that because I think that's the only song in history by the same band. The same band recorded that song twice and was nominated for Grammys both times. It was like, huh? We already gave us a Grammy for that song once.
Just shows you can, in many ways, to skin a cat. You know, that's the old thing right there.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Don Felder.
But it also shows, I mean, the way you are able to reinvent your music, as we're seeing here on the Vault album. And you've done it with the song Heavy Metal. I mean, we were referencing the early 80s. Like, that's the one on the record that we knew before that we're getting again. How do you approach a song that's iconic like that? I mean, obviously, it's heavier.
Well, you know, when I listen to the old version, it sounds analog. It's got tape hiss in it. It's not the modern today, pristine 96K recording with Matt proper mastering. I just thought it would be fun to take that song and bring it from 1982, 81, whenever it came out, you know, up to modern standards of recording and technique and production. So that's why I did it.
But it does, there is some oomph there that I, yeah. You know, because that's always been a little bit of the ironic thing about that song, right? You got a song called Heavy Metal, and sound wise, I wouldn't call it heavy metal, but this version feels a little bit more like in that vein.
Yeah, it's got a drummer on it called Chad Cromwell, who's played with, he's probably the number one leading session guy. He's played with Neil Young and a bunch of different people on the road who came in here in my studio one day and played three takes top to bottom flawlessly. Just like, wow, you got to come play with me live. You were one of the best drummers ever. And he just got this pocket, you know? And so he just really fit that song. It was a great choice I've had him on it. He kind of gave it a nice lift. And I think it's Nathan East playing bass on it too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Well, and among the many other great tracks on here, I mean, we already talked about All Girls Love to Dance, which I've really literally had in my head ever since I heard that. And I just sing along with it. Hollywood Victim, though, there's something about that. I don't know, man, that hits every single thing that I want out of a song.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's like, I mean, you know, it has a lot of those hallmarks in there, you know, stuff that we love from you. Like, when is that one from? What's the story there?
I think I wrote that. I'm not sure if it was for Before the Hell Freezes Over. We were trying to get albums together. We knew we were going to be live, but they wanted to have three or four new songs. And so one of the songs, Love Will Keep Us Alive, I was in a band putting a project together with Paul Carrick. I don't know if you know Paul Carrick. Timothy B. Schmidt. This is when the Eagles are broken up. Myself and a great singer guitar player named Max Carl from 38 Special. We had started working on this album. And we started recording Love Will Keep Us Alive with Paul Carrick singing it. I love Paul Carrick's voice.
Great voice. Fact, one of the best.
I still have a DAT of him singing it that was mixed. And so when we got the phone call that we were going to go back together, they were looking for songs. So Timothy mentioned, well, we've got the song Love Will Keep Us Alive. I could sing that. And so that wound up on the record. We had to go in the studio and I had to completely reproduce note for note the guitar parts, the acoustic part, the keyboard part that we had made this demo of, exactly like the demo. So there's times when, you know, things happen that just gel. And I love walking into my studio when it's dark, turning it on, plugging it in, a guitar, playing, recording, just trying to see what comes through me at the time, you know. And that's one of those moments where sometimes some just brilliance happens, and other times they get sent off to digital heaven. Goodbye, race head, gone, you know.
But that brings me back to that song Hollywood Victim. For that one to be on the cutting room floor, you know,
yeah,
is sort of incredible to me. Like what we hear or don't hear in the moments versus what we hear later, you know, with fresh ears.
Yeah.
And how that can make all the difference.
It just didn't. It would not have fit on Hell Freezes Over as an album. You know, we were looking for more rock stuff, although Glenn did a country ballad on it, I think, Girl from Yesterday. But there was a variety of stuff, but we only had four or five new songs and that was it. So.
Although it would have been part of a Victim series, right? I mean, you compare that with a Victim of Love, and then suddenly you've got a, you know, you're set up for a trilogy if you want it. Put those together out there. Or maybe it's the Disco Strangler. Sorry, I'm dreaming up now how you make a whole storyline of something like that, which, by the way, one of the most criminally overlooked songs, the Disco Strangler,
yeah,
in your also catalog.
Well, you know, it was funny because that was a groove and a track I just wrote. When I first joined the band, Bernie Ledden, my high school bandmate, told me, if you want to write songs for this band, just write music beds. Intro, verse, verse, chorus, verse, solo, you know, in song format, song structure. Don't sing. Don't give them lyrics. Don't give musical, you know, vocals. Just give those tracks to Don and Glenn. And if they hear something they like, they'll write lyrics and harmonies and verses to it. So That's one of the tracks, I think, for the long run that I came up with. And the other one that I wrote was Those Shoes, which Joe had joined the band, and the Eagles had never had a talk box sound on the record. Joe is a great talk box player. So I said, I'm going to write a song that Joe and I can sing harmony or play harmony talk boxes on. Never been done. Unique sound. It's like two trumpet players playing ba 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 ba. Right. So we got harmony talk boxes on it and a great guitar harmony talk box solo, but we had no lyrics, and so I had given them that bed, and Don came up with the idea of Those Shoes, and so turned out to be a fun thing, you know.
And I love that you play that one live too. I mean,
that's
been part of the set for a very long time now. Yeah, it has.
And
I should bring up the tour, right? Because you're going out this summer with Styx and Kevin Cronin, who's in his own transitional moments. I know he's out there doing the Kevin Cronin band. I think it's Bilda. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, Kevin to me is the voice of REO, or and was for the last 25 or 30 years, however long they've been together with Kevin. The records they've made, the hits they've had, you know, he's fronted that band the whole way, you know. So it's a tragedy that they can't work together anymore for one reason or another, but I understand that more than anybody, really.
I'm sure you've got some advice for him, you know, when you guys talk. I'm sure you can help out through that stuff. That's a great lineup, though, and with Styx and everything. I mean, everybody.
It's solid hits for 3.5 hours. It'll just be it's the fastest set change you're ever going to see. There's nothing on stage except for a rolling riser of drums. There's no amps and cables and all that. It's all wireless. So you can roll one set of drums off, roll the next one on, and go.
That's great for the fans right there.
That's right. Instead of waiting 20, 30 minutes in between sets, you know, it's nice to have a bathroom break or get up and get a beer break. But
that's for the new song. You know that. I got a new song. Here comes.
That's right.
I kid. I did want to do a quick shout out too, that a lot of the folks, because you've got so many great players on this record, but you've also got most of Toto on this record too.
Well, like, you know,
you're basically fronting Toto on this album.
I've just known those guys for years, you know, and I think Lukather has played on just about every solo record I've made, back to, well, not on the very first one, Airborne, but Road to Forever. When I started out to do Road to Forever, I didn't even have that song in mind. I was working with a record producer producing my record. Anyway, I've just played and made records with Lukather, with David Page, with just about everybody in that band. Their lead singer came over and sang some harmony with me at all. They're just good guys. As a matter of fact, when Luke comes over, we probably spend the first 45 minutes laughing and telling jokes and having a great time before we ever get around to actually playing music. It's just fun to work with those guys. There's no drama. There's no big ego, just great musical talent. A lot of fun.
Yeah. That's how I feel anytime I have Lukather on this series and everything, that the interview doesn't even really start until 10 or 12 minutes into it. Because the guy's a great talker. I love him. Love him to death.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. This record does. It's so much fun to listen to it. And I know we didn't hit on the lead single Free at Last and everything you're doing there. But that you were able to dig into these vaults, as we see around you once again with the vault, and still find this many gems. I mean, that's something special right there. So really, congratulations on this one, man.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, it's like they just needed time to germinate. You know, and then finally they hatch out of their little eggshells. You got these little chicks running around. So this close to each other, I thought I'd use that analogy.
They were just waiting for their time, and here it is. Lucky us.
That's right.
Lucky
you got
us.
It.
Don, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
All right. I appreciate it, man.
And my thanks to Don. The Vault, 50 Years of Music. Check it out. Thanks to you for checking out this episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. You'll get new interviews just like this one every single week. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions. Anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and a review wherever you're listening from. That always helps out so much, and I do so appreciate it. After all that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 70s, 80s, 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, music news. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Lenny Kravitz, Blondie, Humble Pie, Graham Parsons, Mary Travers, Astro Gilberto, The Black Keys, Grace Potter, Angelique Kidjo, Etta James, The B-52s, and my interview with Peter Frampton, weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's when you tune in weekdays at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
First of all, I'd like to welcome you to the vault.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.